Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Failing frequencies open, sir.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a new episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Holy smokes! Episode 113 of Discovery has just hit your mind, and your mind has exploded into a mycelial network. My name is Jordan Hoffman. I am your host, back from a long exile. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Jordan. What's up? Welcome back.
It's good to hear. Thank you. It's good to hear your voice again. I was away for a few weeks. So I want to thank you for holding down the fort. I want to thank our friend Matt Patches, who filled in for me, because 1 week I was there. And also to thank our guest interviewer, who we're going to introduce in a little bit, Emma Stefanski, who was also a guest on our show a few weeks ago. I was running around. I was away for a week on the Star Trek cruise, which we're going to talk about on a later episode, because I brought some audio back for you. And Brian, I made sure that the people on the cruise said hello to you.
I did hear that. Thank you very much for the shout out.
You did. I will say that I met, and you hear that cough I have a little bit?
Uh-oh.
That is still a little bit of a lingering from the Star Trek cruise. Everything they say about cruises is true, the high and the low. But I had a great time on the cruise. But there were a couple of people who stopped me that listened while I was gallivanting around, and some said they were listeners of the show, and many people said that we love Brian, we need more Brian on the show.
Wow.
And one person said, I love Brian for his crazy theories and he's always right. And I'm like, yeah, so far so good. And then I come back to land and you did it again. Brian's wacky theory. Brian was right. Brian is always right. He was right about Voke from the get-go. Go back. It's all on tape. There's proof of this.
Well, Brian, okay. Well, I was hinted at by something on the internet. Most everything else was my own wacky theories.
You caught them all, and you were the first to suggest that Lorca originated from the Mirror Universe, which you and Matt Patches discussed in a previous episode. So we don't have to get into all that.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I was away. I was at the Sundance Film Festival where... which is another reason why I'm still coughing, because they have an annual film festival in January when it's cold, and they have it on the top of a mountain in Utah where there's no oxygen.
Oh.
And so if you arrive with a little bit of a cold, all it does is exacerbate and get worse, and you have dry lips. And you know what I love? Brian, you wake up in the morning. Isn't there nothing more lovely than to have the sensation of if somebody shoved a Triscuit up your nose? That's what it's like in beautiful, luxurious Park City, Utah, which is a ski town in the middle of a mountain somewhere.
You know,
I
had no idea that's where Sundance took place.
Yeah, well, it's you'd think it'd be somewhere with the sun. Well, there is sun. You're closer to the sun up there. There's no air.
That's a good point.
Now, the reason they did it is this. Just very quickly, the Sundance Film Festival, which I'm sure everyone listening has heard of, and it happens every January. It's the kickoff to the year in the movie biz. And it's also sort of the most important spot for independent filmmaking in North America and probably in the world. Because the other film festivals are usually bigger. Like, there's other big festivals include Cannes Film Festival, Toronto, Venice. But Sundance, you know, always had its roots in, like, bootstrapping young you know, upstarts, you know, maxing out their credit cards and making movies. It's not like that anymore, but that's kind of what its origin story is. So anyway, when it first started, it wasn't that big of a deal, but they had it up in Park City, Utah, and then Robert Redford got involved. They renamed it. It used to be called something else. Then he renamed it Sundance, as in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, by the way. Had it been Paul Newman that got on board, it would be called Butch Dance, which I always like to think about. So anyway, part of the shtick was, back in the old days, it was difficult to get Hollywood muckety mucks who, you know, these young upstart filmmakers wanted people to come and watch their movies. And be like, you know, if you're a buyer from a big studio, like, you know, I don't know, Warner Brothers or something, yeah, why don't I want to go to go see some, well, if you come to this one, Sundance, you can at least get some good skiing in. And that was the draw. Huh. And it snowballed, though, and then Sundance became a big deal, and now it's stuck in this snow village that everybody, well, not everybody, but certainly I can't stand, and a lot of other people can't stand, because I can't breathe up there. So now I've given you the straight dope. Now you know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. But the point I'm making is, while I was there working my butt off, watching four movies a day and then writing about them and getting very little sleep, going to bed at 3:30 in the morning, getting up at 7:30 in the morning, which I need my beauty rest. That's not enough for me. I know you, Brian, as the father of a small child, you're like, that's nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing. I've been up since about 4:45 this morning.
Well, anywho, in between that, I was able to watch, because I am blessed to get early peeks at the new episodes, I was able to watch episode 13, but then I watched it again last night, because to watch it half asleep in the middle of the mountains is not the way to do it. So I've seen it twice, and I can tell you that it is phenomenal. It is really a big deal. I think what this episode does, episode 13, which, by the way, was written by a friend of the podcast, Engage, Ted Sullivan, who's been a guest before, one of our better episodes. It really does mark clearly, this is the Star Trek that you know. This is the Federation that you know. Saru has some lines. He even boldly says, our maiden voyage is now, you know, the exact quote. So that is really cool, and I think will kind of, some people who are questioning, I don't know, I don't get this ship, it doesn't feel like the Federation to me, I think you'll see this is the turning point. But, and this is what's interesting, the episode does it in such a way that it feels so modern and so energetic, and also, and I don't consider this a negative, borrows a lot from Star Wars. There's a lot of Star Wars in this episode, but only the good stuff. So I think there's definitely a lot to chew on. But before we get to that, I think we should talk about our, we should kick it over to our special event where we had a guest come in. But Brian, you had a couple things that you noticed that you wanted to talk about before we did that.
Yes, actually. So speaking of Ted Sullivan, who wrote the episode, he actually did some Q&A on Twitter yesterday. People asked some questions. There's an article on TrekMovie.com that kind of sums it up. But he talks about... hold on here. I lost my page. okay, so yeah, humming. It says, is somebody asked him if when Brian Fuller was involved, if it was the plan to go to the Mirror Universe all along. And he said that yes, it wasn't the plan, but they stretched it out to be a little later in the season, to kind of let you live with the characters a little more, which I thought was interesting.
I think that was a really smart move on their part.
Yeah, because
it feels so much, you care more about the characters, and it feels like more of a, you know, it wouldn't mean much to see Mirror Tilly if you didn't get to really know and love regular Tilly.
My exact point. Yeah. the other question, they answered some questions about Lorca's scars, and how he got them, and they kind of mentioned that there were hand agonizers. I'm not sure if he's joking about that or not.
No. Well, they in Mirror TOS, the first time you see agonizers, it's a handheld device.
You know what? You're right. I forgot about that.
He says this to Mirror Spock, says it to Mirror Chekhov. He says, "Your agonizer, please." And then they get an, or maybe it's not to Chekhov, because Chekhov goes in the agony booth, but it's somebody who's involved, and there's like a little, it's like a little badge that you put on, and they go, ah, and they flip out. And then they call the booths, they call them agony booths.
That's
and
right.
In this show, they've been calling them agonizer booths, but, you know, that's okay. That the fact that they have them at all is awesome. So, yeah. So those were the scars then where...
Yeah, they also mentioned that they could be from daggers, because much like the dagger that the captain of the Discovery used on, I can't remember the character's name, the ensign that attacked Burnham.
On Shenzhou, yeah.
Yeah. Was it the Shenzhou? You're right.
Mira Shenzhou on the Turbolith. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the implication is that Mirror Lorca, or as we've been knowing him, Lorca, has just been like a rootin' tootin' fighting man for his whole life. So the fact that he's got scars all over the place is not any surprise.
And the last thing here they really mentioned I thought was interesting is that, well, there's two things. They mentioned there may be some more LGBT relationships explored in the future. And they said that Lieutenant Stamets' lab is like a personal lab, and that's not actually the main engineering room. So we may see a more traditional engineer in the next season?
Stamets is not the chief engineer. He's the mycologist and the specialist that runs the spore drive. Much like Culber, may he rest in peace or be in whatever sort of ether he's in right now, Culber is not the chief medical officer. We've yet to meet the Bones, Dr. Crusher, Dr. Bashir of this show, you know? And that's always been kind of an odd thing. I mean, you know, I was going to bring this up at the end of the podcast, but I'm amazed still, 13 episodes in, that occasionally when they're on the bridge and they cut to a face, I'm like, who the hell is this guy? There's still some, I mean, I'm starting to know some of the bridge, most of the bridge officers now, but, you know, there's still, like, and one of the problems is there's a Reese and a Bryce.
Yeah.
That doesn't help.
It doesn't.
There's a Reese and a Bryce. Give me a break. And there's Osekun, obviously, is more recognizable. Osekun.
I finally learned that this episode because they said it like three times.
Yeah. And there's the robot gal, Arium. But there's still like one or two. Then it happened in episode 13 at the very end. So I'm getting way ahead of myself. When now Captain Saru, Captain Saru is like leading when they discover the big switcheroo at the end, they cut to some face. I'm like, who the F is this guy? But I love that because, you know, in the very early days of the marketing of Discovery, they made a big deal about the fact that the protagonist of the show will not be the captain. And boy, howdy, did they make that evident with this one.
Oh, yeah.
By, spoiler alert, killing off Lorca. So it's meant to be Burnham's journey. So she's yet to have to go to the doctor. She hasn't seen Bones yet, so she hasn't seen Scotty yet. So I get, you know, the fact that next year we'll see, I guess ostensibly Stamets' boss or whoever makes the warp core go, that's a great opportunity for a new bit of casting. You know, you get to bring in a new. Is that what Sullivan was sort of tipping?
Because as I've previously theorized, and as we've seen this episode, we do lose Lorca, and there was something I was going to say for the actual episode, but I'll mention it now since we already talked about him dying. The fate of regular universe Lorca will be addressed at some point, which I think is interesting. But we're clearly seeing, you know, some characters spots being vacant. I think that leaves some room to bring in some fresh blood for the next season, because we're going to have a few less characters around. And I think there may be another one we may be losing as well.
Oh, okay. Well, this show is definitely has, I don't want to say they, it is, this show has since day one been inspired by the hits of our time. And the biggest hit of our time in fantasy and science fiction is Game of Thrones. And what is Game of Thrones known for if not killing off the people you love? And then also bringing in great casting down the road. You know, Alexander Siddig showing up in season 4, right? So,
although that's a whole story because they ridiculously misused that casting and all that.
Well,
and that character.
I'm tying it into Star Trek. So, yes, season 2 of Discovery could do very well when they go on the campaign trail of what's happening new. If they say, all right, we all love Jason Isaacs and he's gone, although we thought Michelle Yao was gone too and she seems to be back, but you know, we love Jason Isaacs, he's certainly not on board for where we knew him, but here comes chief engineer, and it could be anyone Could be Katie Sackhoff.
that would be interesting.
Shooting Canada. Every science fiction show shot in Canada has Katie Sackhoff. All right, well, listen, let's put a pin in it for now because we have a hot bulletin. Hot bulletin. Brian, can you add the sound effect of some kind of hot bulletin while I say that?
Sure.
Or I'll do it myself. Hot bulletin. While I was out of town, we got a notification from our friends over at CBS All Access that Mary Wiseman, Cadet Tilly, a.k.a. Captain Killy, was going to be in New York, and would we have her on the show? And of course, I would love to have her on the show, but I was away. But I didn't want to have the opportunity to get missed because she is probably at the end of the day my favorite thing about the new show, and that's a tough battle. You know,
it is a tough battle.
She graciously accepted our invitation, and at the very last minute, we got a guest host to come in with you, Brian, our friend Emma, who was on earlier. And Emma was also fighting a cold while she came in and spoke with her. And it turned out to be a really great interview. It's not that long. It's about 20 minutes, a little bit, just around 20 minutes. And I'll be very honest. She was a little bit nervous at first. I don't think she's done many on-air interviews with talent that she adores. So let's give her a little time to be nervous. But I think it was all the more worth it because by the end, there's a real rapport and camaraderie there. And I think it's a really great interview. And I hope that Emma will come back and do more. Maybe the next time we have a cast member in there, she can join us because she did some great schmoozing. So rather than me talk anymore, let's go back now. How long ago was this recorded? About a week ago?
This was Monday. This past Monday. So it was the day after episode 12.
So it was 6 days ago.
Yes.
So let's go back in time 6 days. And Mary Wiseman came and was wearing overalls. I saw a photo. And her hair looked like Prime Universe Tilly, right?
It did, yes.
Yeah, it was not straightened out. And she was not wearing a radical uniform with crazy daggers all over it. She was, as I'm saying, wearing overalls. And we're going to hear that interview now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Engage. Engage. The official Star Trek podcast. Energize.
Hello, welcome to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I'm Emma Stefanski. I'm not Jordan Hoffman, you might notice. Jordan is at Sundance right now, so I'm filling in for him. And we have Mary Wiseman, also known as Tilly, Cadet Tilly, Captain Killy, on the podcast today. Mary, how are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Cool.
Oh, my God. I guess this might not go up immediately afterwards, but we just saw the third episode of this, like, this year's bunch of them.
Uh-huh.
So we have just seen, let's see, Brian, what did we just see? We saw...
We got some major revelations this episode. Some confirmations, some big old fan theories this week.
Yeah, they're definitely in the Mirror Universe, and you have a really cool role this time around. What was your reaction to knowing, when did you learn that you were going to be in the Mirror Universe, you were going to be like this badass captain?
I can't remember when I found out I was going to be the captain, but Akiva Goldsman, who's a producer and a sometime writer and sometime director on the show, told me right at the beginning, right at my beginning in episode 3, that we were going to go into the Mirror Universe.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I was really excited. but when I found out I was going to be captain, I was just...
Yeah.
Floored and really excited.
That's so cool.
Especially the kind of captain that she is very exciting.
She's very scary.
Yeah, she is terrifying.
And I love the costumes that you guys get to wear. Was that like the coolest day, like putting those on?
It was so awesome. It makes you feel like a warrior, and you know, it's like just really great practical boob armor, which I appreciate.
Yeah. Actually, I noticed that too. I was like, they're not like weird shapes.
Everyone else's is like sort of a diagonal across the chest, and mine are like Got to protect.
It's awesome. when did you know, like, or I guess when you got the script, when did you know that you were going to have to be, like, a very scary person?
Yeah, probably when we got the script. So, you know, maybe like 5 days before mm-hmm. I shot it. So some time to prepare. And, yeah. you know, we also had a veteran directing. So Jonathan was able to guide me through a lot of what it's like to sit in a captain's chair, et cetera. And,
That's right. I forgot. Jonathan Frakes directed that episode.
Yeah, yeah. He did. Yeah, he was great.
Oh, man. Was that difficult for you to be kind of mean and weird, or?
Oh, no, I'm a terrible person, so I just tapped into that this whole time I've been putting on a facade.
Great, yeah.
No, it was really fun. It's just fun to, you know, I don't know, bark at people and try to find a place within yourself where you can be intimidating. Yeah. That's really fun as an actor to get to place that. You know?
Yeah, that's cool. And I like the wig that you have too. I mentioned the
what do you
asymmetrical.
Mean wig? I love it so much.
It's so cool.
We went through a lot of rounds of wigs, and then the hair designer Ryan Reed and I like really he really did me good, you know. He did me right.
Do you get like a say in what you get to wear, and you'd be like, I want that one. I want to look like this.
I get a say in as much as I can be like, can it be like this? And then it doesn't do anything. You know, the Aaron and Gretchen and the director and Ryan get to decide, you know, stuff like that. But sure. It's all always so beautiful and amazing, and that's it's so, so much cool. Better than anything I could have dreamt up by myself.
Yeah. No, it looks awesome. I remember when I first saw the all the costumes, like everyone got into their kind of fake characters to be evil Discovery. Like, yeah. I want to stay in this mirror universe forever. Everyone looks so cool.
It's a really fun makeover episode. Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. You have to say a lot of, like, techno-babble stuff, mm-hmm. especially in these most recent ones.
Yeah.
There's that scene where you're explaining, like, giving the spores to Stamets to, like, help him out.
Yeah.
And you have, like, a sequence of just, like, not nonsense, I guess, because it makes sense, but yeah. You really have to be into it. Do you ever get, like, mixed up with lines
oh
like that?
Oh, my God, yes. It's like, you know, some people have a real facility for it. Like, Anthony can walk in there and just be like, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But, like, I am really, like, struggling and, like, wading through mud. But, I mean, it does all make sense. Yeah. And especially all that stuff about his brain. I mean, we have a PhD in neuroscience on our writing staff, and she really made sure all that stuff made sense, and we were working within the bounds of reality. But that stuff was really hard. It was supposed to be like 5 separate scenes, and then I showed up, and TJ, the director, is like, we're going to just get it all in one.
Oh my God.
Broke into a sweat. It's like, totally.
Yeah, I know this.
Yeah, I got it.
How much of a Trek person were you before this? Were you like a super fan, or were you?
So I was not super, like, indoctrinated. I had an uncle sure. who was really into Star Trek. He reads, like, all the novels and knows everything back and forth, and he got us sure. like Christmas ornaments of all the ships.
Oh, wow.
That's really cool.
I mean, we have everything. And so, like, I would kind of watch Next Generation. You know, it was in syndication when I was a kid, so that was always on after school, so we would watch that. But my boyfriend and his parents are, like, hardcore Trekkies. Like, he has, like, pictures of, like, him in, like, yellow uniform, like, like filming Will Wheaton and, like, at conventions, and he tells a story about his mom, like, meeting Patrick Stewart and then, like, weeping with joy afterwards. So I definitely am tuned in to what that's like,
right.
You know, and how much it means to people. And
so was your boyfriend, did you meet him before or after you booked this show? Or?
Before. And there was, listen, there was a period where I was not allowed to tell him, and I would just, like, stare at him with, like, bloodshot eyes. Like, I have to tell you something, but I can't. It was really intense.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What did he say when you finally were like, guess what?
I probably was like, actually, we went the day I found out, like, I mean, I was like, you know, disassociated. I was like, what just happened in my life? But I went and got dinner with him and his father, and I had to, like, sit on it the whole time, and it was really intense, but I got to tell them, and I got it on camera, so it's
really cool. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was really good.
Oh, that's awesome. How have you been to any conventions yet, or are you still?
Well, we went to Comic-Con,
right.
And then the Toronto Fan Expo, and then the New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I haven't gone to the Las Vegas one yet. I hope to go in the future. But it's really cool.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
And the cruise awesome. As well, which our regular host, Jordan, was yep. on a week or two ago. So
Right. I saw pictures. Yeah. It's so cool. It's really overwhelming in the best way.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Especially with just like people who are super into it. Like I'm a fan, but I'm not like, you know, super hardcore. So this totally. Is all very new.
Well, I dig passion in all its forms. So it's like really, yeah. it's really cool.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. It's cool that you're like prepared to be like, yeah, this is, I'm here. This is me. I'm in Star Trek.
One time at the Toronto Fan Expo, there was a guy dressed as both a Lego and Spock.
Like Lego Spock?
Lego Spock. Wow. And I waved at him and he was like, he snubbed me. And I was like, you're going to regret that after you sit in the panel.
Do you know who I am?
Do you know who I'm going to be?
I'm Captain Killy.
I'm Captain Killy. I'll rip your tongue out. Just kidding. I'm sure he's a very nice man. I'm sorry.
If you're listening,
I'm so sorry.
We're just joking.
I loved your costume. It was impressive.
What's the environment on the bridge? Like filming all this stuff? Is everyone really serious, or do you guys just make jokes all the time?
It's so much fun. We try to, like, you know, if there is something serious happening or someone has to play something, that requires, like, you know, a certain amount of concentration, we try to like foster that atmosphere. So you try to help your castmates get to that place and right. not be joking around when they have to like watch someone die right. or whatever. But other than that, it's like we have a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool.
There's like this moment we're in like the turbo lift right. and we're all going to enter at the same time to find out like I'm Captain Killy and like all this stuff. And we all just started singing Eye of the Tiger. And like there's some really good singers in the group is on the set.
Is that on video? That seems like it needs to be on YouTube.
Yeah. No, you know, some things are just for the moment, you know, just so it's lost to ages. But we could probably try to get the band back together at some point.
You should do a musical episode.
Well, we've talked about that.
You should bring musical episodes back. Come on.
We're big Buffy fans, so we talk about it all the time.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
So who's the best singer on the cast then?
Well, Anthony.
Really?
Anthony was on Rent.
Yeah. Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yes, of course.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Of course.
I've got to see him sing since we, you know, started filming, and it's just incredible. And Wilson is a wonderful singer. Mary Chifo is actually a beautiful singer.
Really?
Yeah. I mainly just sing in joke form.
Same.
You get it.
Yeah. Like, I can get there, but, you know, it's not going to sound great.
Right.
Is there anyone who like jokes around a lot compared to everybody else, or?
Well, we're all kind of jokers. Yeah. We all like to laugh a lot. I mean, I, you know, struggle with not making jokes. Doug is really, really funny. Doug likes to like sing and dance in his costume, which adds a lot of comedic effect.
He already has those like hoof feet.
Exactly. I mean, he's hilarious in this Saru costume, like singing show tunes.
Oh my God, I need to see that.
Well, it's on tape. I think Sonequa posted it on Instagram, actually.
Oh, I gotta go find that. And now I'm really praying for this musical episode to happen.
Yeah.
Me, Sonequa, and Shazad do a character called the passive-aggressive makeup and hair person. So we like to do like long-form improv. That like no one really understands why we're laughing so hard. You know, that kind of right. thing is really fun.
Oh, man. What's been your favorite, maybe, I guess, scene that you've gotten to do so far? If you could pick one or two,
yeah,
or 10.
I guess being Killy is really, really fun. And really different than what I gotten to do up until that point.
Yeah.
So that was really, really fun. And, you know, especially when that moment where, like, I found out that I'm Killy. That was like, I don't know, it just got to be like a little clown show for a second, which was really fun. And Jonathan is so, so funny.
Yeah.
And Jason is so, so funny. So it was like just, you know, just kind of a blast. Really lighthearted day.
That's cool. It's a great scene. And I just, like, I remember watching it just sitting on my couch, like, screaming, like, yes, I can't believe this is happening. I wanted this to happen for so long. I thought that, because it was teased, you as a captain was teased early on when Stamets like looked at you at one point and was like, and he called you captain.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know what you're talking about. And I took that to be like, I thought that he was seeing into the future. I thought that you were gonna get like your wings later on. But yeah, I did not see this twist coming that early on.
That's so good. I'm glad.
Yeah. I'm very easy to trick with this kind of thing.
Excellent.
Yeah, I have to say, I've been very happy overall with all the twists in the show so far. Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled.
Oh, I'm so glad. There's a lot of them, so.
I'm sure there'll be more as well. We got 3 episodes left at this point, so.
We got some real sneaky writers. They'll getcha.
Has there ever been, like, a complete shock that everyone on the cast was, like, talking about? Like, I can't believe they're doing this.
Let me see. I think Colbert being killed by Tyler was really shocking.
I yelled. I'm a very, like, active watcher, so I yelled.
Even watching it, I was like, no! And I knew it was going to happen. I think that, like, Lorca kind of turning was the kind of thing where I knew it from the beginning that he was from the Mirror Universe, but I forgot it because he's so good. And then when it happened, I was like, "What? Oh, yeah."
We've discussed that often on this podcast about we definitely had a theory that he was from the Mirror Universe prior, and we were very happy to see that we were right. But he's done a great job of kind of skirting that line of is he, is he not? We don't really know.
No, I think if you would watch back, I think he's doing some real, like, next level stuff with that. Truly.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do right after seeing this one. I was like, I need to watch the rest again because they go through, like, they have flashbacks.
Yeah.
When Michael's thinking about it.
It's like, really hard to ride that line, you know, and not give it away and, make sense of it in both. Make sense of it in both stories, like the story that you're really a captain from this universe and the story that you're secretly from the Mirror Universe. And that's really good work.
It's really cool. I remember thinking, like, they can't cast Jason Isaacs to just be like a nice guy. There's got to be something with him.
He is actually a very nice.
I'm sure he is. Oh man, but yeah, he's played these characters so much.
Yeah, he's really good at it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But he totally tricked me. I did not see that coming at all.
That's funny. I'm glad.
Let's see. What else did I have to ask you about? Oh my goodness. How much like Tilly are you, would you say?
A lot. Yeah. Especially Tilly meeting Burnham, like that's me. Mm. I mean, I have enormous social anxiety and like don't know where to put it. So I'm like kind of a puppy and like so like a lot of that is me, and I feel like, you know, I couldn't play it unless a bit of it was, you know, and I think, but that's not all me, and also that's not all Tilly.
Sure, yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. You both contain multitudes.
We sure do. We are large.
I do remember seeing, like, the first time we meet your character and the first time she meets Burnham and has that, like, total fangirl moment. I was like, this is the kind of character we've needed in Star Trek for so long, because there really hasn't been, like, someone who's just the fan, like, just the, you know, really happy to be here.
Right.
Really stoked.
Someone who's also experiencing that this is like out of this world and fantastical. Yeah.
You're in space.
Yeah.
This is so cool.
It's crazy.
Who's your, I don't want to make you like pick favorites, but who have you had, I guess, the best time working with of the cast?
That's like impossible to choose. I know. But I mean, I've had like a great time with everyone, and I've like learned something from everyone. Yeah. You know, Sonequa is like ever patient, ever resilient. Like, if I were Sonequa, I would be so tired and cranky all the time. She's so lovely all the time. And so I feel like, you know, I've learned a lot about how to be a leader from her, because she's the best possible leader we could have for the show. She really is the heart and soul of it in so many ways.
She's great, yeah.
Yeah. Jason is like such a seasoned actor. I just like, he's the kind of person that when he is on screen and I'm not, I like rush over to the monitor to watch him go, because I'm like, how is he doing it? So I don't know if I've learned anything or just been in awe. he really like figures out a way that he needs to work. You know, he like creates the circumstances he needs to do his work, which I respect. Michelle, I don't know, everybody's kind of a legend. So.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Doug and his eternal patience, being in prosthetics for like 17 hours and still being like an amazing actor through all of that.
Yeah.
And also his ability to nap at any moment.
He naps?
Oh, he can nap at any moment.
I wish I could do that.
For any quantity of time.
Like in his face
in all of it, and just like sitting on a chair like
So he, he sleeps while he's getting the makeup put on?
No, he just like sleeps all the time. We're like, if we have to run backstage, they have to do a camera thing, Doug will just like nod off and you'll be like in a conversation, I've just spoken to him, be like, right, Doug? Oh, sorry, be quiet.
Don't wake him. I guess I had to wear like stuff all over my face and body. I'd probably sleep a lot too.
You gotta get it where you can.
A total narcoleptic.
Sure. Well, I'm sure he has to get up real early to put that makeup on. So.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets there at 3 a.m. and he like leaves at, you know, he's one of the hardest working people in the business I've ever met.
Oh, jeez.
It's incredible. And that goes for the Klingons too. I mean, it's hard work and you have to be really awesome to do that stuff.
Do they have to like speak lower when they talk, do you know? Because they have voices
right.
that are deeper. Do the actors have to do that kind of themselves, or do they just mostly speak?
I'm wondering if they pitch it down. I'm not sure. It feels very natural in when you're working with them. They do some editing, I think, with the voices to make it feel a little
more alien. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know if they're like really pitching their voices down. They're definitely like embodying a Klingon.
Well, they look great.
Yeah. It's amazing up close. Yeah.
Is there anything that you hope happens for Tilly? What are your hopes and dreams for her?
My hopes and dreams. I don't know. I mean, I love what's happened already, where I feel like she's grown so much since we first met her. Mm. And I feel like the writers have really given me opportunities to like learn new things about this person. She's not one note at all.
No, yeah.
She's changed a lot. And so I really hope that keeps happening. And I can't begin to imagine what they have in store for her, but there's a lot of great opportunities and space for things to change for a person. So continuing like upward and onward trajectory. I hope she finds love.
That would be great. That's what I want for her.
Totally.
And hope that love is not a secret Klingon.
Yeah.
I do. I wouldn't mind if it was like a gaseous ball alien. You know, like something like not...
Something interesting and different.
Something not humanoid. Yeah. You have to like bend your mind to understand how you can interact.
That would be very interesting to see Tilly do.
I'm not going to do the writer's jobs for them. Okay? I don't get paid for that.
Well, maybe they'll listen to this and they'll write that in for you.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have a myriad brilliant ideas for all that kind of stuff. But I'm happy to go wherever they lead me because they've done me well so far.
They've done such a great job. I'm so happy with the show. I was very hopeful for it.
That's awesome.
When I heard that it was happening, and then, you know, I've loved it so far. So.
Oh, that's so nice to hear.
It's been good.
Cool.
Jeez. I can't wait to see... What happens next? I bet you probably can't tell us anything.
No.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm trying to dance around questions I want to ask and if I can get anything out of it. None's coming to mind.
But it'll continue to be fun, topsy-turvy. Good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a good place to end it at.
Yeah.
Unless we have any other things we want to talk about. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you,
guys.
This
is really fun.
Yeah.
Thank you for
Absolute pleasure
on.
To have you.
Yeah. So nice to meet you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Engage, the official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
All right, Mary Wiseman on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. What a treat. I wish I could have been there. Brian, she was probably lots of fun, right?
Oh, she was great. She was just like Tilly in real life. She was absolutely amazing, and it was a pleasure to meet her.
Yeah. This is kind of her first gig. I mean, I don't know that she was right out of school when they grabbed her. She's very young. I don't know how old she is, but she does not have too many television and film credits, probably has done a lot of theater. And what a get, you know, what a star is born. A nebula is born. And, you know, it's going to be nuts when she hits now that, you know, she talked about in the interview, has she done a little bit of the convention circuit, the Comic-Con circuit, but before anybody knew her. So this, you know, next time she goes, it'll
be a lot more interesting for her.
Absolutely. So dig it. episode 13. What is episode 13 called again? The actual title is called...
What's Passes Prologue?
Right, which is a callback to something that Lorca said in one of the earliest episodes.
Yes, and oh yeah, go ahead.
Do you now, Brian? This is my favorite question. Is this your favorite episode of the show? I ask you every time.
It's close. I may have to go back to two episodes ago or so.
Episode 10, the first one back from the break?
Possibly, but this was a great episode, and so much happened, so much more than I expected happened. Like, the way I had this whole season worked out was they didn't get to this point until the very end of the season, and they just went warp speed ahead, and it was absolutely nuts.
Yeah, I don't know if this is... I mean, I think there's something about episode 10 and that insane reveal of Captain Killy. Well, it was just the funniest and fun, most exciting moment. And then Lorca pretending to be having a Scottish accent.
Yeah, that was great.
But this one has similar shocks, and some of it is to do with the phaser battle in the corridor, which is something I just could not believe I was seeing. But before we get to that, let's kick it open with a question I have. The first thing you see is Lorca back where he belongs, Mira Lorca all along. And he's releasing his loyals in their agonizer booths. And the voiceover is, you know, 1 year, 3 months, and 14 to the day. The implication that these people have been tortured for over a year is just insane.
It's insane. I mean, it kind of makes you think, you know, how are they still mentally all there? How does that not have any scarring on their psyche for being in that for over a year?
Well, maybe they get like Sundays off or something. I don't know, but it is a question that perhaps when there's a Discovery novel that really digs into the agonizer booths of the Terran universe, we'll find out. But you're right. I mean, you're in there for a year. You're going to come out a little bananas. But nevertheless, he's releasing his people, and we see Mira Landry is there. How about that?
Yes.
Loved seeing her. And what was so funny was regular Landry was kind of a gruff, tough Ice Queen anyhow. So
it seemed like he was the exact same person.
Exactly. Like, maybe Mira Landry should be really nice. I don't know. But it was Mira Landry, and naturally she is his top lieutenant. So it was so cool seeing her. And then we get the story of how Lorca wound up in the Mirror Universe anyhow. And it was never by design. It was an accident. And what I liked was that they did tie it into TOS, because he said something to the tune of his ship. Naturally, I've forgotten the name of his ship, but they've mentioned
the Boren.
Now. There you go. Was fighting the awesome palace ship that looks like the Eye of Sauron on top of a Star Destroyer or below a Star Destroyer. It's crazy. They're fighting. He's being teleported. He's being put through the transporter while the ship is flying through an ion storm, and that sends him to the Mirror Universe. And that's what happened to Kirk and company way back when in Mirror Mirror. They were coming up from the planet of Halcon, trying to negotiate a trade deal about dilithium crystals, warning them about the Klingons. There was an ion storm. They beamed up, and blah, 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 that's how they ended up in the Mirror Universe, and they did the first switch. So that was a nice callback. I don't even think they mentioned ion storms when in DS9, when Chief O'Brien is zipping back and forth between the Mirror Universe. I don't think they ever mentioned that. So that I thought was a really nice callback. And then, you know, speaking of that sort of that the Eye of Sauron, as I called it, this is the sphere of spores or whatever. It's so awesome. The mycelium engine.
Core or something like that.
Core or orb or whatever. And what Stamets and Mira Stamets and Saru have discovered is that it's going to destroy all known life. Because, and you know, this is hardly subtle, it is an unsustainable energy source. And Stamets is like, who would be so foolish? as to try to use a non-renewable, unsustainable energy source, it's going to destroy the planet. And Saru's like, well, people are dumb. You know, this sort of happens. And I don't know. Not that I'm the world's most fervent environmentalist. I certainly could do better with my own carbon footprint. But yeah, you know, it does make you wonder if an alien race were to look at what humans were doing with our own sustainability, they'd probably think we were pretty dumb, huh?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. And I didn't even pick up on that analogy there, but I mean, yes, that's a pretty good message there.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was pretty obvious, but maybe you were so in the moment you didn't catch
probably.
Up to it.
Probably.
But I caught that as a little bit of a, hey, where's our wind and solar plan? Don't be like the Terran Empire, you schmucks. But then very soon thereafter, there was another line that is more ripped from the headlines than anything on Star Trek in decades, where evil Lorca, we shouldn't call him evil Lorca. He's just been Lorca all along.
Yeah.
But true Lorca is giving his rallying cry to his troops that he wants to overtake Philippa Georgiou, and he proclaims that if they follow him, they will make the Empire glorious again. Not too subtle.
Not at all.
Not too subtle. So all I could think was, can't wait till the next Star Trek convention when I see red baseball cap that says "Make the Empire glorious again."
See now,
go ahead.
My question is how did you feel about after the actual reveal of Lorca? I mean, it was great to kind of think about it the whole time, but did you feel it kind of diminished his role overall, because it felt like a little bit of did you feel slightly disappointed by the fact that he was just like evil in a sense?
Well, no, I don't think, I'm not sure. I mean, it was impressive as like a slow burn.
Yes,
sort of
absolutely.
Like master chess player, you know? And when you think back on it, I guess it all syncs up. I mean, he clearly, you know, we always wondered how the heck did Burnham end up on the Discovery in the first place? You know, that pilot was killed. There was that storm of spirochetes or whatever the hell it was that brought her there. And then, you know, why did he keep her so close and all that? So that all now fits in. The stuff about the Klingon War, I mean, I guess he really doesn't have a stake in it. You know, he wouldn't really care, but I guess he had to pretend. I mean,
in terms of that, so now in a previous episode, he did mention that we have to get back to deliver this information to the Federation. He actually did seem sincere in that. And based on that, his speech to Saru and the rest of the crew of the Discovery him letting them go, I think he actually was genuine in that. But
well, it's a good point. I say yes and no. Part of me says no because you got to remember when he's about to beam over with Tyler and Burnham, he says something to the tune of, when you get over there, you're going to have to do things that aren't true to you, but the ends will justify the means, right? And that means things like Burnham killing that former ensign in the turbo lift and watching people get transported
into
space, deep space,
yeah.
So they just to die in the vacuum. So I think, you know, he had to, at some point along the way, he realized that fighting the Klingons and doing that multiple spore jump, rigmarole around the big ship at the end was going to allow him to unlock the how to get back to his universe. How he knew that, I'm not 100% sure, but he was able to put that together, that Stamets, the spore drive, jumping around the Klingon ship was going to do it. So he knew that he had to fight the Klingons to make that happen. So if that was always his goal, if he always kept his eyes on that prize, then being an inspiring leader to a crew that he didn't really care about was going to be it, I guess. I mean, it's a little bit convoluted. It's a lot convoluted, but it makes for good television when at the end of the episode, you see through Burnham's eyes, holy crap, he's a bad guy all along. You know, it was Earth all along. So, but in terms of does it make me feel bad about Lorca? I mean, I really did like Lorca. You know, I got fooled. We got fooled. There were times, you know.
Oh, yeah, we went back and forth. Absolutely.
Yeah, we can listen to our old archives as we first started watching the show, episode 4, episode 5, when you and I were saying, you know, I was really digging Captain Georgiou, and I love Michael Burnham, and I love Saru, but this Lorca guy's really cool. I really like this captain. He's so interesting. He's so appealing. And then when he would push buttons and kind of manipulate Stamets into doing things, we'd be like, oh, he's a little bit of a snake, but he's still a good leader. You know, you need a leader like that in times of war. We bought his BS.
We did.
And that that's maybe like kind of a bigger message, you know, about, I mean, look, this episode says make the Empire great again. I mean, this is a clear message about current political time. And maybe this whole show has very wisely been about not trusting authority too much. If you have a gut reaction, go with it, you know. Something else that Saru says later in the big scene, which I really want to touch upon, Saru says that Lorca preyed upon their idealism and, you know, exploited their idealism. And as such, they didn't, you know, they had to bend a little bit what their core values were, and they were hoodwinked. And I think that maybe this whole season is about if you know where North is, you know what right is, you know what wrong is, and don't let the rhetoric of somebody who seems charismatic change your ideals, you know? That's a pretty good takeaway from this whole season, and that's what Lorca's all about. Now, it's unfortunate because I really like Jason Isaacs, and I like seeing him in the show.
Yeah, same here.
But I think he'll be back. I mean, Michelle Yeoh was out for she was in episodes 1 and 2.
And she was gone for 8 episodes.
Yeah. So after that Make the Empire Glorious Again remark, one of the most amazing things I've seen in Star Trek ever, including the movies, including even the recent J.J. Abrams / Justin Lin films, occurred. Which is the phaser battle in one of the corridors of the palace ship. And I guarantee you that there will be some longtime Star Trek fans who just will hate it. And that's fine, you know, whatever. But for me, that phaser battle was just...
It was insane.
And it was insane. And it reminded me of, like, the Star Wars Episode 1 Phantom Menace fight with Darth Maul and Qui-Gon and... Obi-Wan, which, you know, listen, comparing anything to episode 1 is never a good idea, but
that's the one that shine out of that movie.
Exactly. Maybe just because they were kind of all in a line, but the battle scene was just insane. The phasers, they kind of look like Star Wars blasters. There's just bodies flying all over the place.
Disintegrating.
Disintegrating, and then they have that shield that shows up, and then they have those guns that were attached to the wall, and just the timing of it. It was like a real weird battle. It even almost had like an Old West, kind of like Sam Peckinpah Wild Bunch thing with like, the shield's going down in 10, 9, 8. They were counting it down, and then Georgiou does the emergency transport, and... also, the colors of it. It looked like Tron almost. It was like a mix between Tron, the Wild Bunch.
Well, it's got to be low light because everybody can't see light.
Right. Yeah, by the way, I have to go back. That's new, I think, that Terran people can't have bright lights. I don't remember that ever happening before either.
But I mean,
I would have to. Yeah, I got to look at the old Enterprise episodes where In a Mirror Darkly, Part 1 and 2. I don't think it comes up in the DS9 arc. It's certainly not in Mirror Mirror.
And it's very bright in Mirror Mirror as well.
Yeah, maybe there's a reference to it in one of the books somewhere, but that's fine. It just never came up before. But that battle scene, I think, was, like, for TV, that was, like, pretty just brutal. And it wasn't even, like, crazily choreographed. It was just two sides blasting the hell out of each other, but in a really kind of neat way. I hate to say, but laser-focused way that was really fast and just really had a lot of, oh, my God, like, holy crap, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, no, a lot of people died in that scene, and it was a very, it wasn't that long. It was about, what, 2 minutes maybe?
I guess, yeah. So when you were watching it the first time, what was your reaction? I'm just curious.
I was very surprised that there was that much. I mean, like I know we've seen a little bit more violence in this series compared to past series, but you know, we saw a lot of people just get disintegrated and just fall on the floor, and it was kind of brutal but it was good. It was interesting. It was it's how I would imagine that battle would go.
Yeah, I mean, there've been phaser battles and shootouts in Star Trek before, but never quite like that, because Star Trek has always been different from Star Wars, and that was the most Star Wars-y thing I've ever seen in Star Trek, but earned. I mean, after a lot of cool, you know, it was sort of it wasn't, you know, in Star Wars, the cool, fast shoot 'em ups are sort of the foundation, and then, you know, for me anyway, That's always been the draw of Star Wars. And here you've got 13 episodes of interesting characters, cool science fiction, and then to have a little bit of this as a cherry on top was really just amazing. I mean, there definitely have been great battles before and some action scenes, but never quite like this.
And also, I think you can justify a lot of it by saying that, yes, this is in fact the mirror universe where things are different. This is a fascist empire and not the idealistic federation that we know and love. So I think they can kind of get away with that a little more with that preface.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And then, so the next beat was, you know, Burnham contacts the ship. And I was watching it the second time with my wife. And, you know, she's like she's like somewhere in the ship tapping on a computer. And my wife's like, what is she at, an internet cafe? What's going on here? And I'm like, I don't know. She's Michael Burnham. She knows how to contact the ship.
She's an expert hacker because she pulls out one little wire and suddenly she's done everything right. She's thought three steps ahead.
Yeah, that was fun to watch, but it's like, it kind of had fun. Like, where is she? She's walking around the ship. I was just on a ship. I was on the Star Trek cruise. You don't just walk around and find a computer screen. Where the heck is she? So anyway, she gets to the internet cafe and Saru and Stamets are like, look, we got to do some business. We can't just rescue you, because if we rescue you, it's not a Pyrrhic victory, because we're all going to die unless we stop this crazy tampering of the mycelial network. Can you lower the shields? So now it's really, she's got to lower the Death Star shields, basically. I mean, this is now full on Star Wars, which is totally and 100% fine, because It's a trope, but it's so cool to see that in the Star Trek context, especially with what's coming up next with Saru's big speech, where he, as I intimated earlier, is saying today is the first is the voyage, maiden voyage of Discovery, because it's a Star Wars battle plan. It's a Star Wars goal.
I mean, this to me, the plot of that whole scene, it feels like a movie. Like, the stakes are that high. Yeah. You know, it doesn't feel like a TV episode, and I think that's fantastic.
No, yeah, it's gigantic. It's as big as Star Wars, but the thing is, it's a Star Wars goal, but done through a Star Trek lens.
Oh yeah, because there's absolutely some layers to this problem.
Yeah. There's layers to the problem, and it's won't accept the no-win scenario. And I think it's just hats off to our friend Ted, who, you know, maybe is listening or maybe isn't. Probably exhausted after putting this together,
I would say.
Was able to really meld these two great ideals in a really fun and innovative way. So they got to get the Death Star plans. And then there's like some, you know, similar to Wrath of Khan, Burnham and Lorca are talking to each other through screens, even though they're not on the same in the same room, and he's like, the strong will rise like you. So that's like straight up Wrath of Khan. But then he's like, together we shall rule the galaxy like Darth Vader and the Empire. Or Darth Vader and Luke.
Yeah.
Or the Emperor and Darth or whomever. It's kind of really a great blending. And then
this is one of the things I said earlier, too, was that this was a moment that I imagined was going to be in the last episode of the season, based on the titles and as how I envisioned it going. And they just threw all of this at us at once.
I know. It's crazy because the big twist ending is coming. So then before the big battle scene, which is outstanding, there's one other little thing. And I do have a question about this. Burnham has to get Georgiou on her side. Now, what's funny is that in a way, we're kind of on Georgiou's side, but I don't quite know. But logically, it doesn't make sense because she's just as evil as Lorca is. But still.
Yeah, this is the woman that you know, because some people heard some idealistic information, killed all of her inner circle with a little floating buzzsaw. Right. I mean, just an episode ago. I mean, that's insane. I mean, you can argue enemy of my enemy, but still, it's like it seems a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it's really wild. But for whatever reason, and Burnham, because, I mean, spoiler for a little bit later, she rescues Georgiou and brings her back to our ship. So clearly there's some sort of connection there that she feels that she can be redeemed. And that goes back to Mirror Mirror also, when regular universe Kirk tries to connect with Mirror Universe Spock and tells him that logically good is better than evil. And Spock is like, I will consider it. And that, you know, if you follow the lore, does lead to a changeover in the Terran Empire. But
that fails.
It fails. But what's interesting is, for whatever reason, even though it doesn't make sense, we do like Georgiou. Even though she ate a Saru. She ate a ganglia last week.
She did. Oh, God. I still have nightmares about that.
You know, and as listeners probably remember, I named my cat Saru because we adopted a little kitten right a few months ago, right when we were really in the thick of Discovery. So my wife and I were watching her eat a Saru, and we were looking at our little kitten going, oh, my God, this is terrible.
Well, I find comfort and that Mira Saru is still out there, and he still is alive and kicking as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah. So. It's not the real – it's not Saru. It was one of his fellow Kelpians.
Yes.
I mean, it was one that was on the ship – from the previous week's episode. Holy cow. So anywho, what I found interesting, what I was building up to is Burnham still somehow trusts Georgiou and goes to talk to her in her sanctuary. And Georgiou's like, how did you find me? And Burnham goes, this is your sanctuary. I knew you would be here. How the hell did she know that? She's only been on the palace ship a few days.
Yeah.
How does she know where Georgiou's
sanctuary
is?
I mean, maybe she did her homework beforehand. I don't know. No, that can't be true. No, that can't, she couldn't have done her homework because at that point, she would have known that Mira Burnham had kind of turned on her, you know, and she would have known discovered. Like, that doesn't line up, really.
How long has she been on the palace ship? Not long.
I can't imagine more than a day.
Yeah, I think so, too. So somehow, we got to ask Ted. I bet something got cut. I think what it is that room. And I don't even know what it was. I do know this, though. It looked freaking cool. It was some sort of weird quasi Art Deco Italian futurist, but with blue and white lighting room with a weird table. That's her sanctuary. It must have been a room similar to the one on the Shenzhou. You know, there must have been something about it. Maybe it was supposed to be a chapel. Maybe it was some kind of chapel, but we were left because it did have a sort of a chapel-y vibe. Maybe it was something like that, and it's just left to be implied. But anyhow, I did, and I only caught it the second time I watched it. The second time, I'm like, wait, how did she know this would be the sanctuary? Where the hell is she?
Yeah, I didn't even realize it until right now.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'm glad I could be a pain in the butt about it. But nevertheless, it was real cool looking. And then right after that, we get the big Saru scene, and this is the heart of the episode. This is the heart of the season.
Absolutely.
As I've already implied, first of all, Saru is now the captain. How amazing
is
that?
It is amazing, and it's such a great payoff from the scene, I think it was episode 3 or 4, where he's doing the research on the greatest captains, and it's just like, you see him, like, yes. He's eager, and he wants to learn, and then, like, he's put in the situation, and he absolutely just nails it.
It really is a great payoff, and it's more of a payoff to people like you and I and Karen Hahn and anyone else who wants to read David Mack's book, Desperate Hours, the first Star Trek prequel novel, which takes place on the Shenzhou, the regular Shenzhou, doing about a year before the Battle of Binary Stars, where we get to see a lot of Saru as a on the Shenzhou with Burnham, with original Georgiou, and also with members of the then Enterprise, Captain Pike and Number One. You really get a sense of what he's all about. And so the growth from that book to this moment is really, really cool. So it's exciting. But yeah, then that's the big moment where he says this is the maiden voyage. He really becomes the captain. He's barking out orders. Lieutenant Reese, do this. Lieutenant Bryce, do that. Bryce. He can keep them apart. That's why he's a genius.
Yes.
He knows who's Reese and who's Bryce. Then this, you go back to the palace, and there's an amazing fight scene, four-way fight scene with Georgiou and Lorca and Burnham and
Landry, which was very reminiscent to me of the battle in the second episode with Takuvma and Vok.
Yeah, of course. Yes, it's a total mirror of that. Of course it is. Yeah. And first of all, Michelle Yeoh, amazing high kicks.
Yes. Oh, Lorca's yeah. The one that went straight up and Lorca's face.
I had to watch that again.
Didn't she kick a knife out of the air as well?
Yeah, yeah. She kicks it. Well, he's got a knife. He's got her from behind with a knife. And she does this straight up high kick like a rocket and bops him right in the face with the tip of her shoe.
Yeah.
That was not CGI. That was Michelle Yeoh, who is, I don't know how old she is.
Well, okay, I would argue that was a very high shot. It was you really saw shoulders and up there. So, I mean, they could have done that fit practically, but with somebody else's leg maybe. So,
are you implying that Michelle Yeoh cannot kick?
Oh, no, I'm saying she can, but it looked a little too close and high up. Like, it didn't look like it could bend that way.
All right. Okay.
So I did question that, but I'm still totally with the moment and thinking how badass it was.
That's right. The Emperor will slay you if you say something negative about her. All right. Well, that's a good point. Maybe there was some movie magic there, but it was an incredible fight scene. And then it ended, I thought, with two things: a wonderful piece of writing, cheers to Ted Sullivan, and an amazing line reading. Cheers, cheers, cheers to Sonequa Martin-Green. And the line was, and if you read it on the page, it ain't nothing. This is a great marriage of writer and actor and director acting as the conduit, where she simply says to Lorca, "We would have helped you get home if you had asked." And if you read on the page, there's a million different ways to lean on that. But what she says is, I'm not going to do an impression, but she says, "We would have helped you get home if..." Basically, if you only had asked, like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why didn't you realize where you were, realize what the Federation is all about, and ask for help? And this could have all been avoided. We would have brought you your home. Your home is crazy, and you're all killing each other, but that's your business. You know, we would have done it. Instead, there's been so much agony, literally, in his case. He's been in the agonizer booth.
Yeah.
And I did not see that line reading coming at all. I mean, I was digging the fight scene, but when she said that, I'm like, this is just so smart that it really, really got to me. So, I don't know. That's what I have to say about that. So, Brian, let me ask you a question. She stabs him, right? But before his soul has left his body, Lorca falls through the hole in the ground, a la Game of Thrones season one, into the spore drive center.
Yes.
Right?
And I've thought about
just
this.
Just as the spore drive was penetrated by the Discovery ship, which was an amazing shot also. They fire, and they plow into it, and then it all explodes.
Oh, yeah, I felt that when Saru yelled fire.
It was so good. So dig this. He's not quite dead yet. His life essence is still within him. He is then consumed by the mycelial network, which is then displaced throughout space-time thanks to the penetration of Discovery. I know enough about this show to know that Lorca is not truly gone.
I
think I'm right?
Well, yes. I absolutely had that thought cross my mind, and I think that Stamets meeting Dr. Kolber in the network in the previous episode is kind of a prosthetic precedent that we may be able to see him again via that. But I was kind of wondering what they would need to do that with. Yes, the possibility is there, and I'm sure that even if they wanted to, they can come up with something that they he could be reformed somehow. But I did kind of question it at the same time.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. Number one, I got to say, Colbert, I liked seeing Wilson Cruz again. I don't quite get what's going on with Colbert in Stamets's head.
Yes,
I did not
understand
that
either.
I think it's a memory. I think it's Stamets was having a dream reverie state, and he was, you know, talking with himself, you know?
And that was just how his mind kind of
How his mind interpreted it, because he saw his lover die, and, you know, it was a big deal. I did like, though, at the end when he's traversing the mycelia network, and Anthony Rapp, who I just find so great, he goes, "Thanks, Hugh." I just like the way he says it. "Thanks, Hugh." So, putting Culver aside, I think that Lorca, evil Lorca, Lorca from the Mirror U, not dying, falling into the mushroom world, and then having it displaced is a recipe for he's out there and he's coming back sometime in season two. I'm going to be the one with the wacky theory this time. And I'm the one who's going to say he's coming back because he fell in the spore land.
I feel like if we see Jason Isaacs again, it's going to be the regular universe version of him.
Yeah, well, there's that too. Like, where is regular Lorca? Like, is he like a mechanic working on the moon somewhere? Like, what does he do for a living? Is he a regular schmo? I feel like that is a question that needs to be answered. But they can't answer it before they answer something else. Did we come to the big ending here? Hold on. Oh, one other thing. Oh, two things. All right, Brian, get ready for this.
Okay.
As I mentioned before, I feel that there's a lot of Star Wars influence in this episode. To the good, you know?
Yes.
Only the good stuff. I played it now twice. As Lorca is falling into the orb, into the sphere, into the power of the spore drives, and he then disintegrates. And as I theorize, he's going to come back to life. But as that happens, he makes a death roar. And that death roar, I swear to you, go back and listen to it. Listeners, go crack open your CBS All Access apps and go to the end and watch this moment again, frame by frame. That moment sounds exactly like a TIE fighter roaring in space from Star Wars.
See, I thought it was a variation or a shortening of the famous Wilhelm scream.
Maybe it's both. No, it's lower. It sounds exactly like a TIE fighter. I wish I could do a side by side right now.
I'm gonna go back and listen to that.
Yeah, it really does. Maybe for next week we can have the side by side ready. Let's get people listening to it. And there's two ways to interpret this. One, it's a complete coincidence, and that's probably what it is. But two, it was a sound designer saying, "Let's be cute about this." And since there's some Star Wars essence in this episode anyhow, let's make a similar thing. I don't think they took an actual TIE fighter and manipulated it, but it definitely made me think of that immediately.
Hey,
so that's
maybe Lorca got sent over to the Star Wars universe and he'll be in The Last Jedi. I mean, not The Last Jedi, episode 9.
Episode 9, who knows? So I thought that was really cool. And then one other thing about Georgiou, right before Burnham grabs her and saves her, the shootout is like reminding me of Scarface.
Yes,
when
I can
see
that.
She gets the gun. She's like, "No, they've seen my neck. I have no honor in this universe anymore. I'm going to go out swinging." And she grabs a phaser rifle. And I expect her to like say hello to my little friend. Like, she was really just shooting everything that comes in the door. I thought that was really cool. So that pretty much does it for this episode, except for the twist, which is then they get back. And, of course, they shot it by 9 months. And, you know, in 9 months is all it takes to give birth. And they've given birth to a new reality. The Klingons have won, which really opens up the door to God knows what, because whatever reality they're in now is not Star Trek as we know it, right? I mean,
well, they said it's their own reality.
No, I know, but what I mean is, all this time, Discovery, the television show, has been 10 years before Kirk, Spock, and Bones.
Yes.
Now it's not, because they've changed the timeline.
Well, I mean, this could be how it always went. We just didn't exactly know.
No, Starfleet is dead. They said they couldn't even get a response from Starfleet.
That's when
they,
true. That tag at the end of,
yeah, they're like, mm-hmm. we have no response from Starfleet.
And so you're saying this is now a new timeline in a sense.
This is a new timeline for as long as they remain in it. Now, it's possible that in the forthcoming episodes, or maybe even next season, the Discovery will figure out a way to go back in time 9 months and go back to where the split was. Because the split is this. There's a war going on between the Federation and the Klingons. The Discovery is supposed to be the ones that are going to change the tide of the war, and the Federation is going to win because they have the codes to stop the cloaking device. They have that information. They foolishly didn't email it or send it via Dropbox. And instead, they were going to go to Starbase 46, right?
Correct.
But along the way, Lorca changed direction and plopped them in the Mirror Universe. They have their adventure in the Mirror Universe for 3 episodes. And then they come back, but they overshoot it 9 months, and they wind up in a time in which the Klingons have defeated the Federation. So there's 2 options for the rest of the show. Number one, everything we now watch in Discovery is in another timeline. Not the timeline from original Star Trek, not the Kelvin universe, but a new universe.
The Lorca universe.
Yeah, or the Lorcaverse. Or they're going to figure... Actually, Lorcaverse sounds kind of cool.
That has
a nice ring to it. Or they're going to come back in time and fix things. And you know what? I'm going to say that they don't know yet. I'm going to say that it hasn't been established, because that's part of the fun, is they're going to figure this out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, one thing I'll say is that when Stamets is navigating the network in the end and they're showing you all the tubes, which I thought was a great visual, the whole time I'm thinking like, oh, this is going to be it. This is going to be another theory I had right. And I wasn't. I thought that they were going to end up either very far in the future, to the point where we would be seeing new, the future in Star Trek beyond what we've seen previously.
Like post-Janeway Star Trek.
I thought post-Janeway Star Trek, or I thought we may be going to other realities. So to think that we just overshot the timeline by 9 months is something I actually didn't think of, and this is a very nice, interesting, surprising twist.
Same here. Very surprising twist. I thought when they were in that sort of Doctor Who-like wormhole, I also was thinking, where are they going to go? Where are they going to go? Are they going to go to the Land of the Lost? Are they going to be in the past with dinosaurs? Are they going to go to post-Janeway? And then this was a big surprise. And I don't know. And they're going to have to fight new Klingons. Well, you know what they're going to have to do? The implication from, I forget if it was this episode, no, it was the one before, was that Laurel has saved Tyler.
Correct.
Right? Because she's doing that operation, and she took pity on him and separated Tyler from Voke. Now, I don't know how.
I don't think it's necessarily separated. I think it's a minor repair. I think it's still, it's as it's intended. The Tyler personality is superimposed over Voke, which I don't know how that actually works, but that's how they explained it. So I think that they're both still there, and he can still kind of teeter back and forth between them.
Oh.
Or can be awoken again. I'm not sure. I don't think that she would have made a permanent change that quickly or so that easily.
I think you mean Avoken, not Avoken.
Avoken.
So she didn't like close the door on Voke or Tyler.
I don't think so. I think you'll see the Tyler personality over the Voke personality, just as it was intended to be while he was a sleeper.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm not sure. But the point I'm making is that if they go back, and now they're in a world where the Klingons have won.
Very curious Saru how they'll react to that.
Yeah, Saru has sort of made peace with Laurel now. They sort of had an understanding.
They did.
And what's interesting is we don't know who's in charge of the Klingons now, because what's his name? Cole was killed.
Correct.
So we don't know who is top dog on Kronos at this point. But it's possible that whoever is top dog right now would, for whatever reason, hate T'Kuvma and T'Kuvma's followers and hate Laurel. And if that's the case, if Laurel is public enemy number one, she's going to be on the side of our gang. So that could be good, right? That could make for an interesting thing where Laurel suddenly has to become part of the team, you know, kind of like Seven of Nine joining the Voyager, or even the Maquis joining, or, you know, former villains, you know, turning and becoming, for lack of a better expression, good.
And
so that could be...
At the time of this, we haven't seen the preview for the next episode, but, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're going to get some of those characters in the next episode because we didn't see any of them this one.
Yeah. I don't like watching the preview anyhow. I like talking it out with you. So, yeah, that's a good point. So, who knows? So that's what's happening with that. I had one other thing I wanted to ask, and it's possible that you brought this up with Matt last week. One lingering thing. In two episodes ago, Burnham and Tyler go down to the planet Horrorcon, I think, and they meet with the Firewolf, the Mirror Voke, and you meet Mirror Sarek, who has a beard, which is awesome.
Yes.
And Mirror Sarek does a mind meld with Burnham. And there's a lot of ambiguity about what Sarek learned from that mind meld. We know that Sarek knew enough to know that Burnham was true, that she was pure of heart and intention, and she did not come to the planet to attack Voke or to kill them. You know, to she was there for the reasons she said she was. But we don't know if Mirror Sarek knows that, you know, she came from a different universe, that she was our universe's Sarek's, you know, adopted daughter. We don't know any of that crap.
I think he does know that. I mean, he says that she comes from an idealistic place. I think he knows that he's from somewhere else. Maybe he's not quite sure as to what. I mean, they showed scenes of young Burnham with the regular universe's Sarek. So he,
right.
I mean,
okay,
I imagine that he would have seen that as well.
You're right. It also may not matter because we know that they were trying to evacuate the planet when Georgiou's palace ship came in and destroyed it. And Georgiou was like, I had to clean up your mess. And I think Saru and Burnham are like, oh, they weren't all able to evacuate yet. That leaves a little wiggle room that maybe some of them evacuated.
Yes.
Like maybe Voke evacuated, maybe Mirror Sarek evacuated. It doesn't really matter because they're out of the mirror universe anyhow. But I just wanted to mention that there's a possibility that Mirror Sarek is still alive. And Mirror Sarek knows everything about our universe, including Burnham and everything else and the other Sarek. And maybe that'll mean something down the line. You know, it's a sort of a dangling footnote that potentially could come into play down the road.
Well, I mean, in terms of what you mentioned earlier from the original Mirror episode, Kirk and kind of convincing Spock. I mean, what if Sarek actually communicates with him and says, hey, there's a different way. And he's like, no, that's nonsense. The Terran way is the right way. And then Kirk says it to him, and he's like, wait a minute, maybe he was right all along. And that's what drives him to kind of overthrow the Empire, not overthrow, but take control of the Empire.
Right, yeah. Well, there you go. All right, cool. So there's a lot going on there.
I got one more thing, too, actually.
Yeah, go for it.
So now this is a very minor detail that they did mention in a previous episode, that when the Discovery did go to the universe, that the Mirror Discovery did come to the main universe. Now, back? Is it still in the main universe? Because they kind of went in a different way this time. And also, what did they do? What role did that play? And if they are still there or not?
Yeah, that's the thing. In the first episode, Mirror, the two part of it is that both Kirks were beaming in both universes, and that's why there was the switch. So it's always there is some element of there is some wiggle room with the rules on this one, but they did definitely say that the Mirror Discovery went to our universe. So it's possible that.
I guess I'm just holding out to see the real Captain Killy.
Well, wait, but she wasn't on the Discovery. Was she on the Discovery? Yeah, she was on the Discovery.
She's the captain, yeah.
So dig this. All right, here we go. Here's the theory. You ready?
Okay.
They get back to our universe. The Klingons have won. The reason that the Klingons have won the war is that they found a new ally in their war. And that ally was the Discovery run by Captain Killy, who saw that the Federation on our universe was worse than the Klingons in our universe. In other words, from her point of view...
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
From her point of view, the Klingons were preferable to the Federation, right? Like, when we went over there and they went to that planet where we saw Sarek, Voke realized that even though he's proud of being Klingon, you know, a fellowship between the Tellarites, Andorians, Vulcans, and himself, Klingons, was preferable to the malicious and racist Terrans. Thus, when those gross Terrans come to our universe and seize the Federation, they're like, F that. And she will team up with the Klingons, and that's the reason why the Klingons won the battle, because the Discovery, you know, led the way. So when we're going to see what's going to happen is, we were just asking a minute ago, who's leading the Klingons now?
That's where I was going to see if you were going to go there.
Cole is dead. Laurel's out of the picture. The head of the Klingon Empire now is Captain Killy.
That'd
that's
be amazing.
My theory.
That would be absolutely amazing.
That's my wacky theory of the week. And she's going to be eating live gach, and she's going to be drinking blood and all these things. Oh,
time
my God.
Will only tell.
Well, listen, you know, we've done it again, Brian. We've wasted another hour yapping about Star Trek. And I hope that people like our theories. They certainly should be liking yours this whole time, because you've been on the money. And who knows? How many episodes are left? Two?
Two more.
We got two more weeks of this, and then we have a gap of an extremely long time. So we have a whole year. Because we don't know where this is going to end, but we have two more episodes to figure this out. And then we've got a lot of other stuff coming up. We've got the new Discovery book, which is about to become published. We've got some other guests we want to have on the show soon. So until then, let us know what you think. You can hit us up on Facebook, which is facebook.com/engage, the official Star Trek podcast, all one word. You can hit me up on Twitter at Jay Hoffman, J-H-O-F-F-M-A-N. And, you know, you can find Mary Wiseman, who was our guest this week. She's May_Wise, right? May_Wise, W-I-S-E. And our guest interviewer, Emma Stefanski, is her Twitter account is it's a little different. It's like it's Stefabski, I think. But if you Google, you'll find her. Go to Emma Stefanski on Twitter. You'll find her and say hi to her. Tell her what a great
job. Stefabski, Stefabski.
There you go. Fabulous. So until then, we're going to catch you next week. We got two more weeks. Live long and prosper.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.